Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Record Keeping and Documentation, Best Practices for Compliance. My name is Chase and I will be moderating the session today. I'd like to take a moment to introduce today's speakers. First, I'm pleased to introduce Holly Mockus. Holly is a Senior Product Manager here at Alchemy who brings over 30 years of experience in the food industry with companies including ConAgra, Kellogg, and Sara Lee. She's held leadership positions in food safety, quality assurance, sanitation, and plant regulatory affairs. She was recently honored with the 2013 SQF Outstanding Achievement Award and was also named the 2016 Food Logistics Champion. Welcome, Holly. In addition to Holly, we also have Andrew Clark. Andrew has significant experience working in food manufacturing in both Europe and North America within numerous food product categories, including bakery, cook and chill, canning, animal slaughter, and further processing. Andrew is kindly filling in for our good friend Kristen Kastrup, who was originally scheduled for today's presentation but had a last-minute emergency she had to take care of. So, Andrew, thank you for joining us last minute. Again, welcome Holly and Andrew. During today's presentation, Holly will explain what a record is, and then Andrew will talk about why records matter. Holly will then walk us through some of the record-keeping requirements and regulatory risks. And Andrew will share industry best practices that help you manage record keeping and documentation. And then we will finish off today's presentation with the Q&A session. So with no further ado, I will turn it over to Holly to get us started.
Thank you so much, Chase, and good morning or good afternoon, everyone, depending on where you are in the country. Let's just get started by talking about what is a record. And, you know, record really anymore functions as your evidence that you did what you said you were going to do, or that you followed your procedures or your policies or your company requirements or your customer requirements. That is absolutely the proof that you will provide to an auditor, to an investigator, to a regulator, to company officials. Anymore, lots and lots of records are being required by all different kinds of regulations. Not just those for FDA or for USDA, but also OSHA or any other regulatory body that you may work with. Those records really do paint a picture. You know that old saying, a picture paints a thousand words. Well, your records are the thousand words that paint the picture of what it is that you do every day in your facility. So, you know, how do you make sure that it's a pretty picture that you're painting, that it's a complete picture, and that it tells the whole story? Well, one of the best ways to do that is by making sure that everyone in your facility and in your company understands record-keeping best practices. So let's hop over to this poll question that's coming up next, and I want you to see here the operative word is all employees. Has your company trained all employees on record-keeping best practices? So if you will please go into the poll and select either yes or no, and be honest. This would be very interesting for us to get an idea of how many of you are really thinking about all employees. So if you consider what goes on in your workplace every day, almost every employee that you have will create some kind of a record, whether it's the person who is cleaning floors, or your plant manager, or someone at your corporate office. Everyone creates records. Interesting stats here. 39% are saying yes, we're training all employees, whereas we have probably the vast majority here are saying no, maybe not. So hopefully this is thought-provoking for you. And on that note, what I'd like to do is to turn it over to my good friend, Andrew Clark. Andrew, thank you again so much for being here last minute. And Andrew's going to talk to us about why records are important.
Thank you, Holly. Okay, so why records matter? So that might, you might believe that that's stating the obvious, but what I'm going to do next is go through some true life scenarios of where record keeping actually was beneficial to the probably more the regulators and than the companies, and you'll see why when we move on to the first ones, which I'm, although the name's not there, a lot of you working in the industry will be familiar with this event that occurred. And naturally, the records that were being collected and obtained, hopefully they were reviewed, but the evidence demonstrated that the product was unsafe, but activity or recall took place on behalf by the company in a proactive manner, which obviously impacted them longer term in a significant way. You may remember the case, and having the records, and obviously they need to be beneficial to you as a business, else they're redundant. If you're not going to do the right thing with test results, then obviously eventually you're going to face the consequences when there's an issue of this magnitude, which a lot of you will be familiar with. So again, with record keeping, traceability, you'll all be familiar with it, is incredibly important. And going back to the previous question that Holly raised, where people have not been fully trained on the requirements, generally it's not just the quality management people that are responsible for traceability. So it's essential that other functions that are involved in tracing raw materials, finished products, are fully trained and know what to expect. They have to understand why they're capturing the information, and later on I'll be talking about some of the best practices, and I'll go into a bit more detail on that. But it is essential that people are trained and they do understand, because it can limit a recall, and if you've got the evidence to show that it's only a certain lot or batch that's affected. Naturally, if you're not keeping sufficient records, or people don't understand why and are not retaining good records, then the scope of the recall can go on and on and on, which we're seeing. Again, with this one, there's an event if you read the content with a foreign material contamination. As I mentioned just now, if you've got the evidence to show that the lock codes and the food safety management systems working effectively, you can use that as a defense, and you can actually limit the extent of a recall if you know which batch were impacted. If you don't keep the appropriate records, obviously the cost associated with recall, and some of you have been involved with recall situations and so on, it's an incredible cost and impactful to the business, which we've seen from certain events that have occurred in history with different manufacturing plants that have not had appropriate controls, or they've deviated from their programs deliberately. So why records matter? They give an evidence, obviously, of your compliance, because you're demonstrating as a business, it's not to find fault, it's actually we're running a compliant business, our controls are being managed effectively, and we can prove that through the records that we're maintaining. Obviously, you've just seen some examples, the first one in particular, where they didn't do the right thing, but so they suffered the consequences long term, and you'll know the case. But so it is important that you retain records and they're well maintained, because it can help with customer complaints. And actually, when you having quality complaints and that sort of thing, you're demonstrating your compliance, you return to your records and show that the process was in control, because we all work in the industry, not all complaints are genuine. I know that might be a shock to some people, but they're not. And this is how you demonstrate that you do have a compliant process. So you're demonstrating compliance by actively completing detailed records and retaining them appropriately. And as I mentioned, the limitation of a recall, you can limit the recall if you've got the appropriate traceability records. And of course, they do help demonstrate due diligence. So it can, the due diligence defense, where you can actually restrict the impact from the regulators if you're showing that you do have control, because you've got the evidence there. Because if you don't have that, then obviously you can't demonstrate that you do have control. So it is important that you maintain good records and you retain them, and then they're detailed, and the people people who complete them actually are engaged with the process and do understand why they're completing them. So we're going to go on to another question. So we have the last finding. With this one, we're asking for how often do you review your records and document templates? So it's not just about the records, it's the document templates as well. And when I talk about the continuous improvement later, we'll go into that a little. The question there, as you can see, do you review your record and document templates? And it'll be interesting to see if you do. Well, there you go. That's fantastic. 85% are reviewing records and document templates. I know with food safety management, you do have to review your food safety management plan and obviously your records. You do that and verify them on a frequency more than annually. But it's interesting that people are actually reviewing their templates as well. So back to Holly now to talk about the USDA, EFSIS and FDA record keeping requirements. Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Andrew. And I think those last poll results were awesome. This is a fantastic group. Congratulations on really paying attention to those records and documents. I think you guys have already, you're already well ahead on your record keeping processes. So well done. So let's just touch very briefly on USDA and FDA record keeping requirements. And I just want to point out that a lot of the information we're sharing on this webinar, as well as what Andrew's going to get into shortly with those best practices, are applicable to many, many other records that you keep in your facility. So it's not just about meeting the food safety requirements. It can also impact your workplace safety programs and your HR policies and procedures, as well as just the routine documents that you are keeping for your process, for your production records, your maintenance records. Record-keeping best practices are very beneficial, and we would really highly encourage you to make sure that everyone is trained and understands how to fill out the forms that they are needing to fill out every day. So here's just some general record-keeping requirements that are pretty consistent and standard between the two agencies listed there. Records have to be made at the time the activity occurs, so that's also referred to many times as real time. Obviously, they have to be accurate. Indelible, well, what does indelible mean? Well, it means that you can't easily change the information that's been put on there. So making a record in pencil is an example of a record that's not indelible because you can erase it and make changes at a later time. And of course, legibility is huge. Really encourage your people to use good penmanship. The records should be done as the task is performed. And I know Angela will hit later on about not filling out forms in advance, not filling them out in the cafeteria after the end of the shift, all of that kind of thing. They should include the actual values or observations. So if the column calls for temperatures, employees should not be putting check marks or dittos or hash marks. You should include those actual values that are being called for. As far as identifying information on those forms is concerned, name and location of the facility is actually a call out in the FSMA requirements for preventive control. So you need the name and the location of the facility, the date and time of the activity, the identity of the product with a product code, and then signatures or initials of the person performing the task. And I would just say if you're going to be using initials, it's a really great idea to have an initial key. You may have people who have the same initials, and if you have a copy of them actually writing out their initials on a key or on some kind of a chart, it will serve you well long term and will also be able to help you identify who it is that's filling out that form or making that entry on that form. So as far as USDA is concerned, there are a lot of record keeping requirements, but the three that are probably top of mind with most of the people on this call would be 9 CFR 320 related to transactional records, 416 for sanitation and 417 for HACCP. So what are those transactional records? Well, they're really the records that have to do with your shipping and receiving, right? In very basic terms, it's shipping and receiving paperwork. There are requirements out there that you have to have the name and description of the product, the net weight, the name and address of the buyer and seller, always would want to list the method of shipment, the date of the shipment, the carrier. Many of these are also probably going to serve you very well if you have good record keeping practices in place and meeting the requirements of the sanitary transport rule. As a shipper, if you're shipping products out, especially if they require time and if they require temperature control for safety, you're going to want to make sure that you have really good records and documents in place. So even though sometimes we feel like the FSMA rules are not intertwined, I think they really are. And so not only do good record keeping practices help you for preventive control, but it would also help you to meet the USDA requirements and the FDA requirements for sanitary transport. Sanitation, I think those of you who are currently working in a USDA facility, you probably are dealing with this day in and day out. It's that requirement for daily records for pre-operational sanitation and operational sanitation, where you really are documenting all of the different ways in which you are making sure that facility is sanitary. And so I probably am preaching to the choir, but those records I know are being reviewed by your USDA inspectors probably on a daily basis. If not daily, at least weekly, and you're probably well-versed already in how that written word can help you or hurt you. So making sure that those forms are filled out correctly is definitely a key. And then from there, talking about the USDA HACCP requirements, 9 CFR 417, it does require that written hazard analysis and the HACCP plan supporting documentation. From there, probably a lot of your record keepers are doing those monitoring activities at the CCP. You've got people out doing verifications, you are recording corrective actions. All of that stuff needs to be recorded at the time the event occurs, and it needs to be legible and clear and accurate. And then, of course, those records are all reviewed again prior to the shipment of that product. So just another way in which you need to make sure that those records are complete and accurate. And many of you that are working in USDA facilities also have probably experienced the food safety assessment, right? So those are conducted by an EIAO, and EIAO stands for Enforcement Investigations and Analysis Officer. If any of you are interested and you're not at a USDA facility, you can go out and check Directive 5100.1. We'll give you a lot of information about the methodology that they use as they're conducting food safety assessments. But they do go around to the facilities quite often. They're conducted on a regular, fairly routine basis, and they can last weeks or months. I know I have experienced food safety assessments that have gone up to 3 months, 3.5 months, where that EIAO would be at the facility almost every day during that entire time and just be going through every record, every policy, every procedure that pertains to our food safety plans. They are looking at the scientific support. They're really, really looking at the records that are being kept where you are, in essence, providing the evidence or the proof that you did what you were supposed to do. Some of the things you may want to take a look at would be your corrective actions. Things like putting as a corrective action you retrained, or places where you had repetitive failures, perhaps of a CCP or of a prerequisite program. And making sure you're always tracking those corrective actions and that you're tracking those responses. You cannot continue to say retrain, 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 retrain. If you've retrained several times and the employee in question or the area in question is just not getting it, then you have to come up with something else. And that's one of those areas where that data that you're keeping can help you or can hurt you. But you really have to pay attention to what's being written, what's being recorded, and make sure it's accurate, and then follow up and deal with those trends. So the USDA FSIS record retention requirements would be are all listed here. You can see them. But really the big reminder for this slide is be cognizant if you have company requirements or even customer requirements that are different. I once was with a company that had a 7-year record retention requirement that came down from the legal department. So although we needed to maintain records for USDA for 2 years, we actually ended up keeping all of our records for 7 years. And you're going to want to make sure all of that is reflected in your record keeping policy and that you have a really good process around how do I store records, where do I store records, how can I find them quickly and easily, because you do have to provide them if you're storing them off-site. And you also want to make sure you can purge those records once they're expired. You don't want to let them last out there forever. So let's talk just a little bit then about the FDA record keeping requirements. So the very top bullet there says that the records have to be original, true copies, or electronic records. And when I first read the requirement, I said, ooh, true copy, what really does that mean? Well, a true copy is a photocopy, a picture, a scanned copy, or some other accurate reproduction of the original. So that would mean it's not a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. You know how that goes. Many times we end up making copies of copies. It's a copy of an original. Okay, that's a true copy, and that's what it's required. Records have to be made at the time that the activity occurs. And even though FDA is not requiring compliance with 21 CFR Part 11, and that's really the FDA requirements around electronic records and electronic signatures. If you are using electronic systems and they are meeting 21 CFR Part 11, then good for you. They are meeting a recognized regulatory requirement, and you don't have to worry that there's going to be any kind of questions or problems or issues down the road. Records have to be detailed. I think that's Andrew, I'm sure, is going to give us some great examples around this. But if they're not detailed and you don't really understand what they say or what they mean, then it's time to relook at your record-keeping practices. And then as far as FDA is concerned, those records have to be reviewed within 7 working days. Okay, so whereas USDA requires a pre-shipment review, FDA is requiring that the records be reviewed within 7 working days. All right, so you also have to have a documented hazard evaluation. And I think for the most part, probably your frontline workers would not be doing a lot of this documentation, but we felt like it was important to put this in this deck to really call out the fact that you need to consider the consumer and the intended use. It's very important, very, very important that is documented in your plan and that your people understand who the consumer is and how they're going to use that product. So some examples that we've heard in industry lately is raw cookie dough, right? So, consumer is the general public, but the intended use was really not meant that cookie dough would be eaten raw. It was more intended that cookie dough would be cooked. The same thing if you're producing products for special populations, or if you're intending your consumer to further process the product, or if your expectation is that they can consume it directly from the package. So all of that stuff needs to be considered, and you should really consider that as you're putting together your records that your employees on the production floor are going to be making, so that you're collecting the right information so you can prove that you did the right thing and that you followed your procedures and that you kept that consumer and the intended use top of mind. So on this slide, I think you've probably seen a lot of these bullets before. You have to have a lot of procedures. There's a lot of written documentation that is called for and that is required. But I want you to look at the very last bullet down there. You have to have records documenting training. And for the first time, FDA has required that individuals must be trained on food safety. So, They've called out the PCQI, the Preventive Controls Qualified Individual, and that's the person who's really putting together the whole master plan, who's helping to write the hazard analysis and making sure that all of the procedures are in place for each of the different kinds of preventive controls. But you also have to train that frontline worker, and you have to train them to be qualified individuals. And qualified individual is called out in the preventive controls rule. And so it's just very important that you understand that records have to be kept for training. And you know, at the end of this webinar, there'll be a survey that asks you some questions, and we'd dearly love for you to fill out that survey. And if you're interested in learning more about how Alchemy can help you with preventative controls qualified individual training, or with the training of your workers to be qualified individuals, please check the appropriate box and we'll reach out to you. So here's talking a little bit more about preventive controls. You know, there are controls at critical control points, but there are also other controls, and you will most likely have documentation in place at each of these, whether it's the process control or food allergen control, sanitation, supply chain, and you may have others depending on your specific process or product. All of those are going to be very important places for you to really look at your documentation and record keeping and make sure that you're appropriately training your individuals, that you're involving them as you develop the templates that they need to fill out, and that you're reviewing the documentation and you're providing that good corrective feedback when they're not quite filling those forms out correctly, or that you're really praising them when they do a good job. You know, the other thing that's called out by both FDA and USDA is that you have to have a written recall plan. And I really just want to encourage you, you know, not only are you going to have a written recall plan, you need to make sure you keep it up to date on a regular basis. But from there, you're going to do those mock exercises. And those mock exercises are critically important. And not only should you really test your system, don't just make it a routine thing. Don't pick the easiest ingredient in your facility to trace and call it a day. Make it difficult. Do it on off hours. But while you're doing it, while you're picking difficult ingredients and conducting your exercises on off hours, also review the records and the documents that you have in place and look at them very critically. It is so much easier for you to find a gap within your process in your facility and correct it than it is to have an event or have a regulator or an auditor find that gap. And then many times they want to help you fix it. And sometimes extra help is too much help. So really use those exercises as a great check into what you're doing and to how you're doing, and use it as a continuous improvement tool. Okay, so then the very last piece here then is that the FDA does have record retention requirements as well. The required records have to be retained for 2 years after the record was made. And they do have a phrase in here, a part in here that says that the records, except for the food safety plan, can be stored off-site, provided they can be retrieved within 24 hours of an official request. So I'm just going to quickly tell you, not all that long ago, I was working for a company, and I asked where we were keeping our records, our historical records, and they said, oh, we've got a building a few blocks away, and that's where we store all of our records. And I said, great, let's go take a look at it. And we went and looked, and there was 17 years worth of records in boxes and bags and old garbage bins, and nothing was labeled. Nothing was stored logically. There was no way. There was no way that we would have been able to go in there and simply be able to find a record from a preventive control or a critical control point or any kind of quality documents, nothing, within 24 hours. As a matter of fact, it took us 6 months to weed through and finally get that thing cleaned out, to purge the records we didn't need, and then to get the rest organized. And that was 6 months worth of very hard work. So really put those good programs in place. They will serve you well long term, I promise. And so I think that's enough about the regulatory requirements. I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to Andrew, and he's going to share some industry best practices.
Thank you, Holly. Okay, so what I'm going to do is talk about a few tips and some issues that I've encountered when I've when I've been completing food safety and quality audits. You're probably all familiar with documentation and the requirements and probably inundated with it. So we'll try and go through the slides and I'll give you some best practice that I've implemented to reduce the cumbersome workload that is associated with record keeping. Obviously, we've seen the regulatory requirements, and Holly made a good point that sometimes you're helped, and I'll use the air bunnies when I say that, by auditors and inspectors on record keeping, and often the introduction of more procedures and more records isn't the answer. It's dealing with the ones that you've got and simplifying those. But we'll go into some of the best practices now. So who owns it? Who owns the record keeping? Do you nominate one individual at your manufacturing site or processing plant? You can't. One person isn't responsible for everything. You need to share out the responsibility and the accountability. And Holly mentioned some of the challenges that you have with people completing it last minute and so on. But you also need to recognize that literacy levels and language barriers as well, because some people, they want to do the right thing, they want to help out, but they don't always know or understand what the implications are by filling in the records and maintaining documents and so on. So you need to be sure that the individuals that you give accountability to do truly understand the implication to your compliance programs and how it could potentially impact. I'm not saying you scare them. I'm just saying that they need to understand why it's important and why it's necessary. And obviously, you keep a there's some bullets there on what the expectations are. If you nominate someone to oversee it, and if you have that resource, and that's really good, but not everyone does have that, so sometimes you do have to share out the responsibility. Holly talked a bit about maintaining the records appropriately and where to file them and so on, but it is important there. The bottom bullet is important, keeping an ongoing history of the document changes, because I've come across many times where I've worked in businesses where they didn't, and you saw the individuals working within the plant giving you feedback saying, well, we did this before and it didn't work. It is essential that you keep that history to see that, we tried that and it didn't work, so we'll take a different approach. So it is important to track that history, see who the decision makers are, when the changes were implemented and so on, because it can demonstrate, as I mentioned earlier, your due diligence and the competency of your and effectiveness of your programs if you've got that history. So if you do have the ability to allocate an individual to be in charge of the documented systems and the records and so on, then that's fantastic. But if you can share it out and have backups, then it really is important that you do that, because it does help in the overall management. Obviously, you need a documented procedure on how you manage your records, your documents, and so on, which you review. There's a good point there with test driving new forms. And what I tend to do if I'm working in a manufacturing plant, it won't be me that designs them and I push them down to the people that's going to be completing them. I will create them in association with the intended audience and who I expect to complete them. If you do that, you get that level of engagement and ownership, because there's nothing worse, and you've probably all felt it, when people keep giving you documents and you need to complete this, but not actually truly explaining why. And so if you've got that association and involvement by individuals that are required to complete these documents and records, then they're much likely to actually be effective and they're going to take ownership far more than being dictated to. You continually review your records, and an example of that would be, I worked in a facility where we were having problems with metal detection. So the answer, I didn't come up with it, but somebody came up with the answer, so we'll increase the frequency of metal detection. So now this record is getting more check boxes on it, and because we didn't trust the people that were doing the metal detection process. That's not the answer. It really isn't. It's, as Holly mentioned, the retraining doesn't work. There's a competency issue here. If people don't understand the importance of metal detection records, obviously in association with your food safety plan, your preventative controls, if they're not being completed in a robust manner, then obviously there's a big question mark over the compliance of the product that you're manufacturing. So it certainly is important that you right size your frequency of your monitoring activities, and because obviously the more you do it, the more papers created, the more verifications required, more review and so on. And it's impactful to a business. As you're all aware, no doubt, from a resource perspective, reviewing documentation, creating it, maintaining it is significant. It's a significant cost to a business, and not everyone understands the value. So if you can simplify the process, then certainly do that. But obviously you've got your, as Holly mentioned, the mandated requirements that you do have to follow, so that's important. We'll talk about the storage, effective storage. Again, Holly mentioned her experience with the 17 years of records. Terrible. So if you are retaining records, make sure you only retain the ones that you need to. Don't go beyond that. And if you're using, and what I will say, which I don't see very often, if you're using a third party, go and assess them to make sure they are there is a destruction process for your records, and they're not actually charging you to store all these records that are actually you don't require. So do that assessment if you're using a third party, because I don't see that very often. Another good point Holly made is to ensure ease of retrieval. If you're going to, I've come across manufacturing sites that scan their records onto a hard drive, and they don't keep any paper. Obviously, you've got to make sure that if you're doing that you reference the documentation that you're saving before you discard it, because it, like Holly's example, it's really difficult to find it if you don't actually index it, your records appropriately. And expired documents, we've all come across it during audits and inspections where somebody, because the records, the blank records for completion aren't accessible or they're not readily available, then the it could be operations, it could be maintenance, whoever, they photocopy a lot of them, keep them in storage, and then during an audit, and you can guarantee it's during an audit, an old version will come out that during a traceability a test that somebody's completed an old form or old record, and you get a non-conformance for it. And that there's nothing worse than that, because it's so irritating when that occurs, and I'm sure many of you that's happened too. So have a process that the records are available. Often I see some plants where they've got a stack of forms in a dedicated area, so they never run out, and so the individuals that are required to complete the forms know where to go, so they don't stockpile them, so you don't run into that issue. But you need to make them accessible. Obviously you'd have to protect them so people can't actually go in on your computer system and change the content, and because that's another requirement that you do actually you keep a good copy at all times, and you don't keep recopying it. And Holly mentioned that, because the condition starts to deteriorate if you do that. So with reassessment and updating forms, obviously you do that on a regular basis. But again, I can't stress enough, simplify where you can. I remember working with one business where they had non-conformances during audit, so their answer was to create another procedure for the same activity and more records. That's not the answer. Look at the process that you've got and the record keeping that you've got to make sure that it's working effectively. Sometimes you can merge records together. Sometimes you can delete them entirely because they're redundant, or historically somebody's put something into place, a monitoring activity, that nobody knows why you're doing it, but you're still doing it just because somebody did it years ago. Remove that. If you're not getting value from the records that you're keeping, then if you can, obviously, if it's a legal requirement or it's part of your food safety plan, then don't. I'm not advocating you remove that recording, but if you can merge records, or you can reduce the amount of documentation that you've got, then do it, because it's a real burden on business. And there's a lot of businesses going over to electronic record keeping, and I think Holly's going to talk about that a little later. So some examples there of what to do and what you don't do. Now, when I've been auditing previously, I've raised non-conformances many, many times over some of the don'ts there. So Holly mentioned, if you use pencil, that's liable to be changed and so on. So you always use a pen. Some people dictate it's a blue pen or a black pen and so on, but that's up to you as a business if you want to go that far. Filling out documents in advance or records in advance, that's a huge no-no, but often we come across it when we audit and do some monitoring activities. And often, when you ask the reason why, it's because of the tasks that the individual has. They're deciding from an importance point of view, they'll make a judgment themselves and say, right, well, it's always this, so I'll just write it down. I've come across people that have been putting temperatures down with no thermometer. So guesswork, oh, it looks about right. Terrible, absolutely terrible practice, but it does occur and it shouldn't. So estimating the time, actual times, when you're reviewing paperwork, make sure that the times that are associated and been written on there are not on the hour, every hour, because it's not happening. Be specific, it's more realistic form then. So moving on, control and storage of records. As I mentioned, if you are using external, make sure you review that they are discarding or destroying the records that you, and your own records. Make sure if you've got records that you're storing within your business, then if they're no longer required, don't keep them as a what if we need them. If it's mandated that you only keep them on your procedure for this amount of time, make sure you destroy the old ones, because you don't need to pay for storage of redundant paper. It's pointless. So as I mentioned there, you track changes. We talked about that previously. So make sure that you've got a good, robust procedure to manage and your records and your documents and your procedures and all the rest of it. But I can't stress enough the requirement to downsize it and make sure it's appropriate for your compliance programs, your food safety and quality and so on. Test and verify. So Holly mentioned the recall test. Now, often I've seen some auditors, they'll pick a product in the storage area in dispatch or the shipping area to do their traceability on. That doesn't really test the documentation and the recall process. Go back and go to the, if it's outside storage, go to a time where they test them. If you're paying for a service, test the third party to make sure that they can actually locate those records, because it's really important that you're able to do that, particularly with the regulatory requirements that Holly's just been talking about. I can't stress enough the importance of, and I mentioned it before with due diligence, this is demonstrating effective record keeping is demonstrating your compliance and your due diligence, that you're doing things right, and you can prove that through your record keeping. So as I mentioned earlier on, your records need to be designed, they need to be appropriate. Don't make them cumbersome. Simplify them where you can. I know sometimes it's difficult, but if you can reduce, if your monitoring frequencies can reduce because you've got a history of evidence that shows that they can, then make sure that you do it, because it's all impactful to a business and resource intensive. Records that need to show that, obviously, the records need to show that and give guidance a little on what the actions to be taken when there's a deviation, or if the recording is showing that the monitoring activities are going towards a deviation, then you'd expect some sort of activity to be undertaken. So in review, what we've talked about so far, what is a record, and I mentioned why records matter, and Holly went over the record keeping requirements and regulatory risks, and obviously I've talked a little about best practice. You will be familiar with record keeping and document control. It is cumbersome, but try and right size it and learn from you can learn from non-conformities raised during audits or from what inspectors and regulators provide to you, but compliance programs, you own them as a business, so you need to right size them for you. Make sure the people that are completing the records do understand, and they're not overburdened. They don't overburden people with documents, because there's a tendency to skirt around what you truly require for your business. Moving over to Holly she's going to talk about resources that are available to you.
Terrific, Andrew. Thank you so very much. I love your stories, and thank you so much for sharing those with us. So just very quickly, just wanted to mention that Alchemy really can help meet all of your workforce learning and development needs, and including the fact that we do have a course on documentation and record keeping best practices. So if you would like more information, please use that survey that's at the very end of this webinar, and just let us know. We'd be happy to reach out and talk with you about it further. So, you know, if you're looking to, especially those who are FDA regulated, if you're looking to really move your programs forward and get your workforce trained as qualified individuals, Andrew, it was terrific to talk with you and to work with you on this webinar, and I'm going to turn it now over to Chase.
Well, thank you, Holly and Andrew. Before we jump into the Q&A section, just take a quick moment. Coming up in October, we have a couple of webinars through October and November. The first, Navigating FSMA's Foreign Supplier Verification Rule, which we know is a very hot topic that we've heard throughout the industry, so we'll be doing a session in October for that. And then in November, Waste Not, Once Not, Strategies for Reducing Waste for Increased Profitability. These are being finalized as we speak, so you can visit the Alchemy website under the events section, and they will be up there in the coming weeks. But just a quick update on what's to come. And as Holly mentioned earlier, preventive controls for human food. Here at Alchemy, we offer a couple of different ways that you can receive that training. First and foremost, we have a classroom that's available setting that we do all over the country. If you have 8 to 10 individuals at your facility that you would like to have trained to be a preventive control qualified individual, we actually can do personalized training at your facility. And then we are happy to announce that we have recently launched a blended e-learning course that is available through the Alchemy Academy and can be found under the events section on the Alchemy corporate website. So those are a couple of additional opportunities that you can interact with some of the subject matter experts we have here at Alchemy. And with no further ado, we will jump straight into the Q&A section. Andrew, we have one that we will start with you. I believe FSMA requires 2 years record retention. Is this true regardless of the shelf life of the product? Any additional insight you could provide would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Obviously you need to comply with the regulatory requirements ultimately, but you also need to look at the product, depending on what the product is and how the consumer is going to use it. So if for instance, because I ran into an issue years ago with bread, and we only obviously bread, fresh bread, and because the consumer was freezing the bread, and a long time ago, it wasn't accounted for in the normal use, and so there was an issue with this frozen bread. So when it came to actually reviewing the documentation, they'd maintained the bread in freezer for so long, we didn't have the records anymore. So you really have to look at the product and what the consumer is going to do with it. So think about that when you're setting up your record retention, and obviously be guided by your legal people, because as Holly mentioned, there's quite a few businesses that mandate that you retain records for 7 years. I've never come across anyone going beyond And it, you know, if you can reduce that, then I suggest you do. But obviously, look at the regulatory requirements and the individual product when you're determining your how long you're going to keep the records for.
Terrific. Thank you, Andrew. Holly, we will direct the next question your way. Our company has invested in electronic record keeping. Is there a pitfall we should avoid as it pertains to electronic record keeping, especially when it comes to staying in compliance?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and Andrew, I'm going to ask you to hop on this one as well. But so first of all, the FDA does have that 21 CFR 11, and I would really recommend that you go in and give it a quick read, and that you also find out if your electronic provider, your record-keeping provider, meets those requirements. There's actually some very good points in there and some things that you really need to think about. you know, there are requirements around how it's used and how people are trained to use it, both on your side as the user, but also on the supplier side. The other thing I would also look at is redundancy. You know, I guess I'm just thinking about, for instance, when you're recording temperatures in a cooler, you may have someone who goes around and manually writes that temperature down on a periodic basis while you also are collecting those temperatures electronically. Maybe you have like a SCADA feed or whatever. So if you're doing that, then should you ever have like an electronic power outage or a failure in your electronic system, at least you would have a manual record that you could go back to that would help you to kind of limit you know, product holds or limit your losses or your liabilities from there. Andrew, what do you think? Do you have any other thoughts around that?
Yes. I never used to like electronic records, but some of what you said there is really poignant, Holly. Particularly in wet and damp environments, paper is really difficult to maintain in a legible condition, and so sometimes it's better to use electronic. But also, we need to consider when we're using electronic systems the ability to back up the data and retrieve data and that sort of thing. So what we do if we audit electronic records, we're looking at, so what's your process if it all goes down? What do you do? Do you have another method that you instigate when that occurs, and so on? So it is important that you look at the ability to retrieve data, electronic data, because sometimes if it goes down, then you're in trouble. And that's happened a few times during audits, but you know, from my experience, they've been able to, the IT system has been able to retrieve it, which has been great. Another thing that's great with electronic records is it helps so much with traceability and recall tests. They're much faster than they ever used to be when we were wading through piles of paper. So it's really good that people are moving over to electronic, but need to consider the ability to back up the data and retrieval when you're considering using electronic systems.
We have time for one more, and we have a follow-up question that I think dovetails nicely off of both of your comments, Holly and Andrew, so I will pose this question to both of you all. If we migrate to an electronic record keeping system, should we consider protocols for deleting electronic records once we are beyond the required time frame?
I'd say yes, because it's very, very similar to your paper-based system. If you don't require it, then you don't need to retrieve it. And I know what you're saying, because a lot of people think that, you know, and it's probably true, I don't know, I'm not an IT person, but if nothing's ever deleted once it's electronic, but there are ways, and I suggest that certainly that you don't want a history that of information, because, you know, using up data, you're paying for that regardless, and the storage of electronic data, you're still paying for it in some manner. So if you can eliminate it and discard it, then you need to.
And I think the only thing I'd add to that is that you should definitely make sure whatever it is you do that you've checked with your legal counsel or your company executives, and make sure that they're comfortable with it and that it meets all of your requirements. the legal counsel will usually be the one, I think, who will give you the guidance as to whether or not you can, you know, try and erase those records or purge them in some way, shape, or form. So that would be the only caveat I'd add to that.
Well, terrific. Well, again, Andrew, Holly, thank you so much for joining us today. And to the rest of you guys who have joined for today's webinar, thank you for taking time out of your day. We greatly appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.